Welcome to Food for Thought, the last episode of 2023. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. I'm your host. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. Today's topic is stop doom scrolling and start joy browsing. Not sure if we're going to be able to get that to go viral, but I'm going to give it a shot. Good news for animals and nature from 2023. This episode, as always, is brought to you by the listeners of this podcast. That means you. If you'd like to keep this podcast going and if you'd like to keep it ad-free, you can support it by becoming a patron. We end this year, the 17th year of Food for Thought. Next year is the 18th year of my writing, producing, and hosting this podcast. If you get anything out of it at all, please join my community of supporters. You can go to joyfulvegan.com. You can find the donate button. You can go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. You can click on one of the links in the show notes below, and you can choose the level that's right for you. And if you're a listener on Apple Podcasts, you can now become a subscriber there, get bonus materials and early access to episodes. Thank you in advance for keeping this podcast going, for keeping it ad-free. I appreciate your support immensely. And if you'd like to join me on any of our upcoming all-inclusive vegan trips, you can join me in Northern Italy. You can join me in Rwanda. These are unforgettable trips of a lifetime, bonding with like-minded folks, having a fantastic time. You can find all the details at joyfulvegan.com. Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing well. I hope you are having a lovely holiday season and you are creating plans and hopes and dreams and desires and goals for the new year. I love this time of year for that reason. And I'm here to talk about some good news. If you read or watch mainstream media or even social media, accounts of animal activists even, you would think the world was about to end and that there's no reason for hope. The media, including print media and TV media and online media, YouTube media, social media, thrives on sensationalism and focuses on a sense of doom and gloom by design. And this is the case whether we're talking about crime or the economy or politics or climate. It's the case whether we're talking about the state of the world for animals or for nature. And we are partly the cause of this. As much as I think a lot of us say we want positive stories, and we don't want to hear how horrible things are all the time. A study by Nature found that negativity drives online news consumption. According to their findings, although positive words were slightly more prevalent than negative words, they found that the negative words in news headlines increased consumption rates and positive words decreased consumption rates. So for a headline of average length, each additional negative word increased the click-through rate by 2.3%. What's more, negative language in online content characterized by, you know, outrageous or upsetting or negative headlines has been linked to user engagement, including sharing and liking. Negativity in news increases physiological activations. Negative news is more likely to be remembered by users. This is not surprising. The newsroom phrase, "if it bleeds, it leads," was coined many decades ago to reflect the intuition among journalists that stories about crime and bloodshed and violence and tragedy sell more newspapers than stories about good news. And today it's the same thing with our clicks. Every time we click on a doom and gloom story, we are feeding the bad news beast. And I'm not here to discuss why this is so. There are certainly psychological reasons for it. Perhaps it reflects something foundational, fundamental about human cognition, that negative information is more sticky in our brains, right? I think I heard a friend say to me once that bad news is like Velcro and good news is like Teflon. So there's something about negative information sticking in our brains. It could be that negative information somehow triggers, activates primal threat responses, right? Knowing about possible negative outcomes allows for planning and avoidance of potentially harmful or painful experiences. Perhaps negative news confirms our bias that everything is awful, if that's your bias. And I'm here to tell you that that's not my bias. And I'm here to tell you that everything is not awful. And it's not that we shouldn't pay attention to injustice and war and violence that need our attention. Of course we do. But we also have to know how and when things are going well so that we can learn from them and implement useful strategies to ensure success and progress. Of course, that's what we need to do. And we also have to understand the mental toll this takes on us. The term doom scrolling was coined in 2020 to describe the habit of compulsively consuming distressing news. And of course, we all use that term today. We know what that means. And research spanning several decades has consistently cautioned against the potential detrimental effects of excessive exposure to negative news. Numerous studies have identified a connection between poor mental health and increased news consumption, especially during traumatic events like war or natural disasters, and we certainly have enough of those, like terrorism, like mass shootings, and we certainly have enough of those. And so the findings indicate that individuals who consume more news during and after such events, and especially if we're just looking for them, are at a higher risk of experiencing depression and stress and anxiety. And I think it's something all of us can identify with. It's not to say that this isn't something I'm aware of, and it's not to say that I don't experience depression or stress or anxiety when it comes to the state of our world, but I also choose to look at what is going right in the world, and that's what I want to share with you today. I also want to invite you to my February 2024 workshop. It's called Preventing Compassion Fatigue, Avoiding Burnout, Cultivating Resilience, Practicing Self-Care, all while being an effective advocate and voice for animals. We're going to spend 3 hours together. We're going to be focusing on how a mindfulness practice and a compassion practice can heal and prevent compassion fatigue. Really, what we're going to talk about is empathic distress more than compassion fatigue, but we'll talk about that in the workshop. And all of that's to say is there are ways to manage this, and there are ways to avoid this doom scrolling that takes a mental toll on all of us who care. So head over to joyfulvegan.com, click on events, register today. It's already filling up. I'm so thrilled to see so many people signing up for this. I think it's obviously speaking to something we all care about, we're all aware of, and we all feel very personally. And I can tell you, we did our effective communication workshop this year. I was going to say last year, but in 2023. And it was so fantastic. People joined from all around the world. And I know that there are people who have connected personally and even in person from this workshop. And so that's part of my intention, is to create a way for you to connect with people who are like-minded and who can be a support for you and a friend. And it's only going to enhance your life. So check it out, joyfulvegan.com. So if you want bad news, you will want to turn off the podcast right now. Okay, so just stop listening right now. But despite the tragedies of 2023 and the stress and the strain and the bad news, there were also so many reasons to celebrate. I'm giving you some from 2023, especially the stories as they relate to animals and nature and climate. So I'm proposing that we stop doom scrolling, we start joy browsing. And I'm going to try and get that to go viral. I don't know. I don't know that it's going to work, but we're going to try. And so I'm giving you 10 stories. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of reasons to feel hopeful. And I invite you to go seek them out. And that's going to be one of the things we talk about in the workshop. And I'm going to give you some thoughts about how you can avoid this doom scrolling throughout the episode. We'll talk about that as well. But I would really encourage you to just go seek out the good news. And if you're interested in what I have found and kind of parsed, then sit back, enjoy, and here we go. Number one good story, and these aren't in any order, is about rhinos. Rhinos are making a comeback. I know you've heard about rhinos who have faced severe persecution throughout history, particularly due to rampant poaching for their horns, heavily targeted in Africa and Asia, and they have suffered drastic declines in population. There's an unfounded belief that rhino horn, composed of keratin like our skin and our nails, possesses medicinal properties that has fueled this relentless poaching. So in a positive turn, the South African Police Service, SAPS, S-A-P-S, reported an 11% decrease in poaching activities in the first half of 2023. And no doubt this achievement is attributed to collaborative efforts between many different organizations, including the South African Police Service, including other organizations. And adding to this good news, the year concludes with a promising development for the future. 2,000 white rhinos bred in captivity are set to be reintroduced across the continent, the African continent, in a 10-year release program led by African Parks. Now, you may have heard me talk about African Parks in the past. If you came to Rwanda with us in 2019, you would have experienced the work of African Parks, because African Parks is a nonprofit organization. They're incredible. They're dedicated to the conservation and management of protected areas in Africa. They were founded in 2000, and they have already had so many successes. They collaborate with governments and local communities to restore and safeguard key wildlife habitats. And their initiatives include anti-poaching efforts, habitat restoration, community engagement, and wildlife reintroduction programs. And the reason I'm bringing this up in relation to our 2019 visit to Rwanda, that wasn't our last one, we were there in 2022 as well, but in 2019, we had the pleasure and the honor of seeing the results of their work in Rwanda, specifically in Akagera National Park. Now, Akagera National Park is on the eastern part of Rwanda. It borders Tanzania. Now, there are four national parks in Rwanda. Akagera is one of them. The other one that's the most famous is Volcanoes National Park. That's in the north. That's where the mountain gorillas are. It's the only place in the world where mountain gorillas live. Number two is Nyungwe National Park. That's in the south. It's a rainforest, and we go there and see the chimpanzees. And then there's a third one we haven't been to. It's called Gishwati Mukura National Park. It is the newest, and there's a lot of work to do. Visitors aren't there yet. They're still building this national park, and they're actually bridging two parks together because there had been a break, and so there wasn't an ability for animals to migrate. And so they're doing a lot of work there. Stay tuned. Someday we'll go there. I look forward to that. But the fourth one is Akagera. And Akagera is in the east. As I said, it borders Tanzania. And so as you can imagine, there is savanna there. It's not rainforest. It's not bamboo forest. It's savanna. For this tiny little country to have so much diversity is really incredible. And so Akagera suffered greatly after the 1994 Rwandan genocide. The national park was brought to a near collapse. For instance, there were over 50 rhinos in the late 1970s, and that entire population was killed by farmers who returned to Rwanda as refugees after the end of the Rwandan Civil War, after the genocide. I mean, most of the wildlife was basically killed for bushmeat. The trees were cut for timber. It was just absolutely devastated. But in 2010, Rwanda started working with African Parks. And in just 10 years, remarkable changes have taken place. And we got to see the fruits of that labor when we were there. So basically, African Parks took over the management of Akagera National Park in partnership with the Rwanda Development Board. And the park underwent significant restoration efforts, including anti-poaching measures. We actually saw when we were there, behind a fence, they have kept all of the snares that were gathered when they started, you know, going in and managing the park and removing all of the snares and all of the traps. And thousands, they're just piled up to show visitors the significant difference in how much the park was just overrun by snares and animals just didn't have a chance. So it was really striking. I will never forget that. So they have also created, you know, habitat rehabilitation and wildlife reintroductions. And so there was a very successful reintroduction of lions in 2015. And we saw them when we were there in 2019. We saw lions in the park. And there was a reintroduction of rhinos in 2019. And we were there just a couple months after the rhinos were introduced. And it was just absolutely incredible. Five rhinos, three females and two males, were transferred to Akagera from different conservation zoos around the world. And I say that because obviously there's lots to talk about when it comes to zoos, but there really is an effort. If animals are bred in zoos, but actually released into the wild, that's very different than just breeding animals in zoos and having them part of the exhibits and the display. So that's a conversation we can have another time. But indeed, these rhinos were introduced to Akagera. It was an incredible feat, and they're still thriving and they're still doing well. So Akagera is an example of the kind of work that African Parks does, and it was really an honor to be able to see that. Now, when we go to Rwanda, and we have another trip coming up in November, and I really encourage you to join us, because of course we do go to volcanoes to see the mountain gorillas, we're down in Nyungwe seeing the chimpanzees and lots of other non-human primates. We don't go to Akagera as part of our trip anymore. It just was too much to do all three parks. However, we do help you plan an excursion to Akagera. It's not far from Kigali, the capital, where you land. And so we've had people either tack on Akagera for a few days to do a safari at the end of our trip or at the beginning of our trip. And it's worth doing because you don't have to even leave this beautiful country to get a safari experience. You see all of the big five, as they're called. You see the rhinos, you see, well, hopefully, you see the elephants. I know one of our visitors, one of our travelers saw a leopard. We had searched for leopards. We hadn't seen them, but she saw them, saw a leopard, and also elephants and all of the smaller animals, the boar, and all of the different deer species as well. So the point is, rhinos are coming back, and it is an incredibly hopeful story. And it's because of collaborations between governments, between organizations like African Parks, between organizations like just conservation organizations. And there is reason to be hopeful. That's something we need to dwell on. And if these are organizations and a cause you care about, you can support this work. Okay, this list is a little biased, number two is for me, because I am very interested in the success of non-human primates. And you've heard me talk probably ad nauseum about Rwanda and the success of the mountain gorillas there because of the work that's being done. But I want to call attention to a woman I learned about because the BBC has a list every year, and there's one list called 100 Women 2023. And I have dug deep into her work and who she is. And her name is Dr. Gladys Kalima Zikusoka. And she is from Uganda. And of course, you cannot have a successful gorilla population growth in Rwanda without also having a successful gorilla population growth in Uganda and neighboring Congo. Unfortunately, Congo is just still in an absolute mess, but Uganda is another place where people go to visit the mountain gorillas. And Dr. Gladys was one of the country's, well, actually, she was the country's first wildlife veterinarian. And she has worked tirelessly to safeguard the mountain gorillas in Uganda. And so I know I've talked a lot about Diane Fossey, and I stand by the, you know, incredible work she did, really, to this day. The work is being carried on by the Diane Fossey Gorilla Foundation, which is amazing. But I want to talk about Dr. Gladys, and she has started an organization called Conservation Through Public Health, because she realized when she first started working as a vet in Uganda, as a Ugandan, that she couldn't work to safeguard the gorillas without protecting the native population. And because there's so many conflicts between wildlife and humans, I mean, for us, it might be, you know, wolves and, you know, or coyotes and dogs, let's say, you know, if we live in an area where, you know, there's coyotes and we're worried about our dogs, and that's a wildlife, you know, conflict, or raccoons because, oh, we're worried about rabies or whatever. You know, in the case of, you know, Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, it's gorillas and elephants. It could be gorillas and cattle. It could be gorillas and farms, farmers who are growing crops. So in order to work to protect gorillas, you have to work with the local communities. And that's what is being done in Rwanda. And it's also what's being done by Dr. Kalima Zikusoka. And I'm just so moved by her work. She's been doing this for the last 30 years. And after three decades, she is one of the reasons there is an increase in the number of mountain gorillas in that region. So it's not just in Rwanda. It's not just by the Diane Fossey Gorilla Foundation and the work that's being done there, but it's also because of the work that's being done in Uganda. So the mountain gorillas in Uganda have increased from 300 to 500. And that was enough to downgrade them, and you would have heard me talk about this, from critically endangered to endangered. So the mountain gorillas in this region are still endangered, but they have been downgraded from critically endangered to endangered. So thanks to her efforts, this is like a 60% increase. It's huge. And so she advocates for biodiversity conservation by fostering coexistence between people and gorillas and other wildlife, which improves the livelihood and the health of the humans. And it also improves the livelihood and the health of the non-human animals. And so she works just like is being done in Rwanda. I mean, it can't work otherwise. To encourage the communities to view the well-being of gorillas as mutually beneficial. And it's been working. And so these are stories to celebrate. You know, I've talked before about when Diane Fossey moved to Rwanda a half a century ago, there were about 250 individuals. But because of the work that's being done in Uganda, in Rwanda, they are now at over, I think 1,025 in both those together. And it's so successful that, as you would have heard me maybe say, but this is actually happening now in 2023 and 2024, is the Volcanoes National Park, where we visit when we go to Rwanda, is expanding to 10, it's expanding by 10,000 acres. To allow for more habitat, because the success of the mountain gorilla means that they need more habitat. And because there's so much farmland that has been created around it, they need to expand the forest, and they are expanding it by 10,000 acres. So good news indeed. I'm so excited to learn more about the work being done by conservation through public health. So check that out. Check out her work. And the story of the gorillas continues to be a good news story in 2023. Now, we will go to other continents, but I'm going to stay in the African continent for one more good news story, because giant pangolins are defying extinction. Despite the fact that we keep hearing that they are just on their way out, there is reason to celebrate. So in Kenya, they were long thought to be extinct. I'm talking specifically about the giant ground pangolin. There's several different species of pangolins, but this is the giant ground pangolin. They were first spotted again in 2018 after not seeing them for 50 years. So, you know, like, that's incredible. And it's like the rhino. They are heavily poached. They unfortunately are the most trafficked mammal. A lot of it is for bushmeat locally. But a lot of it is also because of this falsely assumed medicinal property. You know, it's often traditional Chinese medicine, TCM. We've talked a little bit about that. And because of that, the world's eight pangolin species range from vulnerable to critically endangered. So the return of Kenya's giant ground pangolin is a huge success against the odds. So there's an organization called the Pangolin Project. They have worked closely with communities and farmers, because again, this cannot happen without local communities. And they are increasing awareness of the pangolin's need for conservation. And as a result, over 20 landowners united to form the Forest Conservation Trust there to protect an area crucial to the pangolin's survival. It spans over 5,000 acres. And so it's collaborations like these that are reason to celebrate. And again, there are organizations like Operation Pangolin. There are lots of organizations, the Pangolin Project, that you can support. We, in 2022, when we were in Botswana, we actually saw a pangolin, which was unbelievable. Even our guides who were there with us were just absolutely stunned, because none of them had ever seen one. Because they, you know, first of all, they do hide, but also because they're so rare. And it was definitely an honor to witness that. So it's happening. I want to mention a couple other successes if we're talking about rare animals who are coming back from the brink of extinction, because again, we hear too many bad news stories. So we've got the very rare golden lion tamarin monkey. They're found, like the mountain gorillas, found only in in Rwanda and Uganda and Congo, this animal, this tamarin monkey, is found only in the Rio de Janeiro state in Brazil. They were poached almost to extinction. They are now, for the first time, jumping around the Atlantic rainforest more than any other time in the last half century, thanks to conservation efforts. We've seen the return of blue whales to the waters off of the Seychelles, so again, kind of over in Africa there. Scotland's surging golden eagle population is reason to celebrate. There is the return of the bittern, which is a bird in England. You know, England does not have a great success story when it comes to wildlife, and the efforts being made to rewild the UK, mostly happening from Scotland, is just incredible. A great success story coming out of England are beavers. They're making a remarkable comeback in the UK. They were reintroduced in 2002, and because of that, beaver populations are thriving, with approximately 254 territories reported across Scotland by January of 2023. So many reasons to celebrate, many reasons to focus on the good news that's happening when it comes to animals who were on the brink of extinction or who are endangered. Another good news story, I want to give it its own story, is tigers. So again, we hear about tigers being on the brink of extinction, and indeed in the past century, global tiger populations have suffered a staggering decline of 95%. The last official count in 2015 portrayed a precarious situation for tigers in the Indian subcontinent, countries like Nepal, India, Bhutan. However, the latest census, it's almost 10 years later, paints a different picture from 2015. Tigers still face the endangered classification, but there's been a notable increase in the numbers over the last 8 years. So India is home to about 75% of the world's wild tigers, and it has seen its population nearly double since the 1970s, growing at a rate of 6% annually over the last decade. So Bhutan, starting from a very low base, indeed has witnessed a rise in tiger numbers, adding over 30 individuals to reach a national population of 131 tigers. Similarly, Nepal has achieved the remarkable feat of doubling its tiger population in just under 10 years, which is significant for this really small country. Nepal is a very small nation. So tigers still remain under substantial threat, but these are positive stories, positive trends to signal a more optimistic future for the world's largest cat. In 2010, when the global wild tiger population reached a concerning low of 3,200 individuals, 13 countries with tiger habitats set an ambitious goal to double their numbers, and it's happening. So the Global Tiger Forum, they are an organization to keep an eye on. They have revealed that there's a new estimate from 3,200 individuals in 2010 to 5,574 wild tigers in the world. So this is incredible. This is reason to celebrate, and it's something we need to be aware of and share with each other. Okay, moving over to another continent, we're moving over to Australia. Many of us remember the wildfires that hit Australia in 2020. It was one of the worst bushfire seasons in living history, and it was absolutely devastating to watch these fires rage across that country. And one location that suffered significantly was Kangaroo Island. It's isolated from the mainland, and there was no escape. There was no escape for the animals, and fire just swept over 500,000 acres. So almost 50% of the entire island was burned, and native wildlife suffered immensely. And so here we are at the end of 2023. In the last 3 years since 2020, massive efforts by locals and smaller organizations and the National Parks and Wildlife Service have been undertaken to help the island's birds and mammals recover. And this year, 2023, saw wildlife numbers return to levels close to those before the fire tragedy. And so fire damage is still evident across the island, but so too is the regrowth of flora and the sound of birdsong and the sight of mammal activity. which is incredible. And the event also initiated practices that will significantly mitigate the impact of any future fires. So, you know, lessons and gifts, right? That's all we get. So more time is needed for more recovery, but this is a hopeful sign and one we must celebrate. And you can go find stories. I mean, I know when we see these tragedies, we all kind of seek out. I mean, I know I looked at some of the footage from the koalas and the kangaroos and all the devastation. It was awful. And you can go look for the stories of the good news stories. Go just type in Kangaroo Island and 2023 and, you know, flora and fauna coming back. So we need to go look for those stories. In fact, I want to tell you that there are ways that we can stop contributing to this stress in our own minds. Like, it's not inevitable that we are overwhelmed by bad news. It's up to us, right? So we're going to talk about some of these strategies in our workshop in February, but let me give you a few thoughts about how you can mitigate your own mental stress when it comes to the state of the world, right? So number one, do not pick up your phone first thing in the morning. Write in your journal, read a passage from a book you love. Maybe it's poetry, maybe it's inspiration. I pick up the Tao Te Ching first thing in the morning. If it's the Bible for you, I read the Daily Stoic as well. Whatever it is, pick up something inspirational, right? I write my gratitude list before looking at my phone, certainly before looking at any news or social media accounts, right? Number two, kind of what I'm saying is choose to joy browse rather than doom scroll. You can actively seek out and follow sources that share positive stories and uplifting stories. Curate your social media feeds to include content that brings joy and inspiration. Joy browse. You can use that. Joy browse instead of doom scrolling. Number three, set limits and schedule news time. I read the New York Times. I love reading the New York Times. I read a lot of stories and opinion pieces from some of my favorite journalists there, but I'm also very mindful of how I can only do it for a short amount of time, and I don't do it every day, and I certainly don't do it first thing in the morning. So set limits, schedule news time, establish specific times during the day that you want to catch up on news, set a time limit. Right? This prevents the continuous exposure and allows for a more mindful consumption. So that's the third piece of advice I have for you. Number four is diversify your content. So when I say I go over to the New York Times, it's not just for headline news. It's also because I'm interested in the arts. I'm interested in books. I'm interested in health. So well is a segment of the New York Times that I always read. I'm just interested in other aspects. It doesn't have to just be the news. So include articles on personal growth, on hobbies, on topics that interest you beyond current events. I think that would be the biggest message I have here, is that it doesn't have to just be current events. If you are looking to stay abreast of, you know, stories, and there might be publications you really like. Okay, but there's other topics that perhaps interest you beyond current events and beyond politics and beyond just, you know, current news stories. Okay. And number five, take breaks. Engage in real life, intentionally disconnect from screens, intentionally spend time on activities you enjoy, turn your phone off during the day, maybe take a month, maybe take a week, maybe just take a day to not be on social media, to not be online, spend more time with loved ones, spend time outside, pursue hobbies that bring fulfillment. This is all proactive. These are choices we have to proactively, you know, engage in positive ways. Okay. So I'm going to talk more about this when we have our workshop. I hope you join me. Go to joyfulvegan.com to register. But those are some ways that we can seek out the positive rather than just doom scrolling. Joy browse. Okay. Number six is, I am just amazed. You know, this is the thing. I have my work, I have my skills, I'm not good at everything, neither are you, neither is everybody, but I am just so moved by individuals, by organizations who are just going there and providing solutions. Like, there's so much happening. There are so many innovative individuals and so many organizations that are doing incredible work. So there's an organization called 4Ocean. They removed 30 million pounds of ocean trash in 2023. I mean, it's insane, right? So, you know, the plastic situation, it's bleak And this is, you know, why I choose to live zero waste and make an effort to decrease my plastic consumption, because since the 1950s, we have generated over 18 trillion pounds of plastic. And a significant portion of that ends up in our oceans. As you know, it harms animals, it harms ecosystems. And it's daunting to think of like ocean pollution. But there are people who are making efforts to alleviate this issue and to safeguard marine life and to safeguard ecosystems. And I'm just amazed. So in 2023, there was a global ocean cleanup that took place. It was between June 16th and 17th, just 2 days. And more than 3,100 volunteers joined forces to remove 88,000 pounds, 44 tons of trash from marine and coastal environments globally. That's just over 2 days, right? Like, that's incredible. Maybe you were part of that cleanup. Maybe you support these organizations, but I'm just really amazed. There's this environmental engineering organization called Ocean Cleanup, and it saw its largest extraction this year, removed 25,000 pounds of trash from the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in a single extraction, because they have this technology that enables them to clean the area of a football field in like 5 seconds. Every 5 seconds, it can clean an area as large as a football field. That's incredible. And then once the trash is removed, there's an onboard crew that sorts through all of this garbage, most of it's plastic, and they put the plastic to good use. So for instance, recently they teamed up with the car maker Kia to incorporate the salvaged plastic into their new electric vehicles. Like, how cool is that? And I think they also sell sunglasses, which help fund the cleanup. So it's stories like this that just give me hope. It's stories like this that make me feel like I've done nothing with my life, but to be honest, just because it's so amazing. So that is number six in our good news stories. Number seven, you would have heard the story of the judge that sided with youth environmentalists in Montana in the U.S. So now we're in the U.S. In 2020, 16 plaintiffs ages 5 to 22 took the state of Montana to court for, they said, violating their right to a clean environment, which is enshrined in that state's constitution. This year, 2023, after a protracted court fight, they won. On August 14th, in a decision that the state attorney general, of course, has appealed, a judge ruled, though this is significant, that Montana must consider the effects of climate change when deciding whether to begin or renew fossil fuel projects. This is called Held versus the State of Montana. It's a first of its kind case, and it gave rise to a generation of young activists who, of course, know the power of speaking their minds and using the courts, using the law. And it's unlikely to be the last. I think it is going to inspire many, many more. And it basically deemed that any laws promoting fossil fuels in Montana unconstitutional. Like, that's a first of its kind. So I think we're going to see more like that. We're going to see other lawsuits like this. And I think we're going to see other cases like this. So stay tuned. And I think that is a good news story. I want to talk more about fossil fuels for our number eight story, because 2023 saw a huge number of milestones in the transition away from fossil fuels toward clean energy and toward electrification. None of this is perfect. Of course, there's so much to do. Of course, there are big businesses and big oil that are trying to keep things as they are. Yes, and a lot of good things are happening, again, because of democracy, because of voting, because of litigation, because of legislation, because of resourcefulness, because of innovation. There's so many reasons to celebrate this. So let's just go over a couple of them. Number one, Ecuador voted to stop oil in a historic referendum that pitted people against big oil. Ecuadorians voted to halt drilling in a protected area of the Amazon. This was just in August of 2023. Some 60% of voters said no to oil exploration in Yasuni National Park, home to uncontacted indigenous communities and, of course, wildlife, animals, nature, trees, flora, fauna, etc. And this territory spans 2.5 million acres. So it's significant. It's significant and reason to celebrate. Number two, clean energy investments outpace those in fossil fuels. So there certainly are banks and retirement funds that continue to funnel money into new oil and gas projects. I'm not saying that's not the case, but in 2023, investments in renewable energy surpassed those. That's good. We want that. We want that. Number three, more than 100,000 new climate jobs were created in the Inflation Reduction Act passed in 2022 by President Biden. That was a bipartisan bill that passed, which is going to have reverberations for decades to come. And it needs to be talked about more because it's significant. So this year in 2023, I think it passed in 2022, but in 2023 is when we finally saw some of these, the creation of these jobs. So more than 170,000 clean energy jobs spread across 44 states came out of this Inflation Reduction Act. And these aren't just in places like renewable energy factories. It's also construction workers, electricians, mechanics, support staff, and it's a sign of what's to come. In fact, the November report in 2023 estimated that IRA, this Inflation Reduction Act, is going to create more than 400,000 jobs in clean energy projects in 2024 and beyond. So that is a reason to celebrate. EV sales, electric vehicle sales, hit a new record. In the U.S., more than 1 million electric vehicles were sold in 2023. And that milestone happened in the first 11 months of the year. It marks a 50% year-over-year increase compared to 2022. And it's not just the U.S. Drivers switching from fuel combustion engines to electric vehicles around the world increased. In November, it was 1.4 million electric vehicles sold that month alone. Now, again, I know there's issues with batteries, and of course, there are people trying to solve those too, but that's what we want. We want to move away from fossil fuels. And in 2023, there was a record number of renewables creating our electricity. So in the first half of 2023, renewable energy, including wind and solar and hydropower and geothermal and biomass, accounted for 25.11% of the electricity generated across the country. This is in the U.S. That's significant. So experts believe solar especially has hit a tipping point, and we're just going to keep seeing it go in that direction. That's what we want. And China, which is the world's biggest polluter, of course, they saw a spike in emissions in the first few months of 2023 because it bounced back from COVID. But now it has installed a record amount of green energy infrastructure, and China's emissions are forecast to start falling in 2024, thanks to the country's rapid rollout of renewables. So it's happening around the world. Now, I want to just make mention of COP28, the UN climate summit. And of course, there were climate reparations, which became a reality, which is incredible. Of course, oil-rich Dubai was a controversial host for the climate summit. But despite various controversies, COP28 chalked up a few achievements. I know time will tell. I know it's not perfect. I know there are loopholes. However, the fact that in the final agreement signed by almost 200 nations, there's a commitment to transition away from fossil fuels, that's a historic moment for climate rhetoric. And it is significant given that, you know, most of these big oil countries signed on. So we're going to see, right? Of course, there's loopholes. Of course, you know, is there going to be enough ambition to do so? We'll see, but that's still historic. An even greater achievement at COP28 was the launch of the Loss and Damage Fund, which means countries worst hit by climate change, because of course, don't forget, the least developed countries are the ones who are affected most by the climate change that's created by the most developed countries. And so wealthy nations, including the UK, the UAE, and Germany, made significant contributions to this Loss and Damage Fund, which means that the countries most hit will be compensated. Now, again, there's questions about how it's going to be funded in the future, et cetera, but it's still an amazing step, and it must be said, and it must be celebrated. So that was number eight. Number nine, we're getting to the end here, is I have to just share this one because working really closely with my own city shelter, I'm very, very good friends with the director of Oakland Animal Services. Her name is Ann Dunn. She is a hero. She is amazing. No one knows how hard she works. No one knows how hard any of these people work who run municipal shelters. And she is doing so much to create a foundation so that when she leaves, because she can't stay there forever, it just takes everything out of you to be able to create and pass the baton to someone who has a foundation. It is so hard. It is just so much work. And of course, as you know, she started Cat Town. I've talked about her before. And she, I'm going to do an interview with her. I know I don't do a lot of interviews, but I'm going to be doing some interviews in 2023. And I want to talk to her so that you can hear her. She's, her vision, her commitment, her compassion is amazing. And so Cat Town is an organization that she founded, and they work basically with the shelter because they pull all of the cats from the shelter, from the municipal shelter, to be able to get them into homes, to be able to get them adopted. So as you know, I used to foster cats with a different organization. They retired. And so I've reached out to Cat Town, and I'm going to start fostering again with Cat Town. So stories about shelters for dogs, for cats, for whoever are very close to my heart. And so there was a story that was, that came out around Christmas time. I saw it in the Good News Network, which I follow, and you should, because, you know, good news. And it was the story of a Pennsylvania shelter, an SPCA shelter, that emptied its kennels for the first time in 47 years. So there's a picture of them with completely empty kennels, of no cats, no dogs. And this is in Adams County in Pennsylvania. And so in 47 years, they haven't seen the shelter empty. I think after they took the picture of them with the empty cages and the empty enclosures, I think a stray cat came in right after they took that picture. But that is incredible. And so that SPCA successfully adopted out almost 600 animals in 2023, reunited 125 strays with their people. And obviously clearing the shelter allows them to bring in more and rescue animals from other facilities across the state and save more lives. And they, you know, they pull animals from other shelters to be able to relieve the stress of other shelters. So just needs to be celebrated. Support your local municipal shelter, support your local rescue groups. The work that people do hands-on to rescue cats and dogs and, you know, just all of it is just incredible. And as you know, I'm a huge proponent of also supporting your local wildlife rescue. Please, please, please consider that as we get to the end of the year. And then finally, I want to share a story about reducing wildlife and human conflicts. There's so many ways we can be part of this as well. You can go listen to any episodes I've ever done about, you know, our own urban wildlife, right? But because of rewilding and so many positive stories around rewilding, what we see is an increase in wildlife and human conflicts, or the potential for that. And so Switzerland is an example of a country that that started bringing back wolves. They started in 2012. And since the population has started to grow, it was estimated that there were around 24 packs at the start of 2023, which means 250 individual wolves counted. And this is close to my heart. We were also just in Alsace, and, you know, and we were talking all about just the fact that Europe, especially, you know, they just decimated their wolf population, because a large reason is because of the conflict with farmers and ranchers, people. I mean, this is like literally because we bring animals into this world only to use them up. We're decimating wildlife populations in favor of domestic animals who we don't need their goods from. We don't need their fur. We don't need their wool. We don't need their milk. We don't need their flesh, right? And so every time we are consuming any kind of animal product, whether we're wearing it or eating it, we are supporting the decimation of wildlife populations. And so nature preservation groups definitely see this as a win for nature, seeing 250 individual wolves counted in Switzerland. But farmers aren't happy because there's an increase in attacks on their sheep herds, right? And so this biologist, his name is Jeremy Moulin, he came up with an idea to protect the wolves while still appeasing the farmers. And, you know, I've talked about Project Coyote in the United States. Please go support them and check out their work, because they have some really innovative techniques for working with farmers and ranchers to prevent these conflicts and to prevent these attacks. But this was, I thought, pretty innovative. So this Jeremy Moulin co-founded an organization called the Organization for the Protection of Alpine Pastures, which is a Swiss NGO. And the organization is staffed by volunteers, and they basically work to deter wolves from approaching sheep in remote Swiss mountain areas near the Italian border. And so a couple of the volunteers, one's a biologist, one's a cardiologist, spend nights overseeing sheep herds using techniques like powerful torches, but very bright lights, and thermal binoculars to prevent potential wolf attacks. So their goal is to ensure the safety of both livestock and wolves. You know, if you, I know it means that it's protecting livestock, but it's protecting livestock because otherwise the wolves would be killed. In fact, the Swiss government actually eased hunting regulations for wolves because of the concerns by farmers. They actually had previously authorized the culling of 24 wolves and population control measures. So the Swiss government was already saying, yeah, let's favor the livestock, the farms, the ranchers over wildlife. And so this is a way to say, okay, we're going to protect the livestock because in protecting the livestock, we're protecting the wolves. This is exactly what Project Coyote does here in the United States. And so they're promoting this coexistence between wildlife and human activities. And so they will go on the mountain, they will use whistles, they will do things to deter the wolves from attacking, and that's really all it takes is just, you know, kind of whistling and scaring away the wolves for them to not attack the mostly sheep. So I think that's amazing, and I just love these, you know, stories of people who are just doing the right thing and just doing what they can to help and to promote progress and to create solutions. So thank you, everyone who is in any way involved in anything that is promoting progress and helping me tell good news stories, because there are a lot of them. And I'm really touched and moved by all of these stories that I read, and I consciously read, and I proactively read, and I seek out. And I hope it's helped you as well. And speaking of Switzerland, one episode you can count on coming up soon is the vegan awesomeness in Switzerland. You may have seen on social media, I was at the oldest vegetarian restaurant in the world. It's in Zurich. It's in Switzerland. We actually got a hotel across the street from the restaurant on purpose. And there's so much to say about vegan awesomeness in Switzerland, and I will be sharing that with you in subsequent episodes. And so stay tuned, make sure you're following. Please, please consider supporting. You can make a one-time contribution. You can support through Apple Podcasts. You can become a Patreon supporter. I'm so grateful to all of you who still stick with me and who still support this. You hear no ads, and you can hear continuous, hopefully inspiring content for you that I have committed myself to, and I'm not going anywhere because I can't help myself. So I hope you consider becoming a supporter, and I hope you join me in February 2024 for more good news and ways to feel hopeful and resilient and effective. And maybe you will be in my list of good stories in 2024. So reach out to me, let me know if you have any questions, go over to joyfulvegan.com, become a supporter, and register for the Preventing Compassion Fatigue Workshop, and I hope you join me on an upcoming trip for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau signing off from our 17th year of Food for Thought, and I look forward to seeing you in 2024. Thanks for listening.